Welcome to the Classic Friendship Podcast. This is episode 5, the one with the glamour. It's May 2014, and my name is Sean Bruno. This podcast features the glamour-laden work of Roja Farkash, Robbie Ellen, Amy Heineman, and Hannah Perry. First up, we have a glamorous reading from curator Roja Farkash. Roja is founding director of Arcadia Missa in London. There'll be 3 readings by Roja, and this is the first.
Glamorous readings. The first reading is a series of excerpts from something I wrote for Total Vitality about a year ago. I loved you once. I loved you for your beauty. I loved you for your youth, but context is everything. You killed us. Something about it and the way it was said. You're Harry Styles, and you broke my fucking heart. I'm telling you this in the same vein when I say we were together once. I'm whispering it in your ear now, below your lobe. You just got a record deal. Your voice broke 7 months ago. You flexed for me for the first time on Instagram last Tuesday. We were together then. Where did you leave me? That was hot, that time you and me had. It felt like we could point fun at everything else and thrive in our own inauthenticity. But then your inauthenticity was weaponized so openly, it came on me like a pearl necklace out of a teal Range Rover curtailing past St. James's Park. The thing is, I still have your calendar. But now I've hidden it under a laminate shelving unit instead of perching you upon its best laminate shelf. Feminine qualities as our saleable commodity. Everyone always knew teenage boys sell more, really. You could have kept me and taken that. It was all I had. It's not just my subject plus ideology that your image has subsumed, but also structural hierarchy spitting in my face. Remember that? You said you'd always wanted to spit on me, and for a second it got me off. And actually, I have to have closure now, and it's just this. Harry Styles, you broke my fucking heart.
And that was Roja Farkash. This is Hannah Perry with Maybe Some Other Time.
It's like, right, that's it. Going into some crazy stuff, like some big, fucking bizarre experience those things in a chaotic way.
It's like algorithms,
and going from that to like going to zero in, and then having some, like, you know, whatever, and having that level of fucking intimacy, reacting. And then having some bounce in between these
brackets.
Oh, I'm so free. And to feel now, to be honest, like, I'm not gonna lie, I felt so free. $70-80 year old woman in her 20s, 30s. And that's not gonna change. So they can be this suit. But this stuff is like one ton, like, music industry, fucking, you know, slurs, but freedom, loneliness, freedom, loneliness. And if you're in the middle constantly, well, you don't feel lonely, you don't feel free. You don't feel really, like, then going from that, positive or negative, you're just neutral in regards to, like, feeling like you're reacting. And then having some, like, you know, what are you, just bearable. Like, this is just. You know, if you're always feeling okay, then what sort of life is that? When everything's okay, all the time, like, also in a certain sense detached from, like, any kind of, like, linear sort of, so it's just out there. But it's like a high and a high down, you can't have one without the other.
That was Maybe Some Other Time by Hannah Perry. And now for the second of three readings from Roja Farkash.
So, when I put those excerpts together for reading one, I then decided to write a short stream of consciousness story type response to those words, since they're like a year old, and reflect on them. I thought it'd be kind of helpful for me to do as an exercise. So this is what reading two is made up of. It's that exercise. She walked upward into the social / exhibition space. It was, obviously, what you would call a space. Yet how it made itself material was entirely through socially structured ways of looking. Annoyingly, it was a white cube, a square room but not proper. The walls didn't reach the ceiling, so the cleanish white plasterboard didn't adequately veil the non-factored dusty brick and concrete structure that the white was built into. You could say the original walls were seeping out in radical refusal, but you'd be a lying dickhead. However, as soon as your eyes looked at those newly painted walls, to a degree some illusion was shattered. You just wanted it to be streamlined, moulded over cracks. The falsity of neutrality should have held up, literally. Well, at least to the ceiling. Everyone basically knew each other, and the space paved a way for dances between bodies, and particularly between hands. Everyone had FOMO of not being noted as within the scene, so they'd all tag themselves as there. It was the worst part to not be tagged by one's associates. Like, if you look at her Twitter feed, it's basically a real-time text performance, like, not just her emotions and stuff, but it's also, like, it's her art. And then, like, when you see the small objects designed by her, they're so beautiful. They're, like, these found objects, but then, you know, she's, like, got them produced by companies, so it's kind of, like, a residue from her Twitter almost. Like, it makes the objects way better if you follow her online, you know? Like, that's why I like it. It's not, like, typical emotions. Like, it's not, like, obvious or, like, for its own sake, but it's, like, really, like, beautiful and poetic. And it's also, like, you know, like, really real. It's, like, there are material objects that totally talk about capitalism. Yeah, totally, she said. And then to be chic, she added, it's all bound with like a personal narrative that attempts a subversion of the hegemonic platforms afforded to our ontologies, you know? Well, I think it's more like about how like labour and capitalism of objects, but like, yeah, like that's presented through her ontology, I guess. Yeah. And then she shuffled off. As they got lubricated, enough to still control their self-image, people flopped onto the floor. Looking bohemian was nowadays decreed as to look urban in a minimal kind of way. Hipster 2.0 is flaneur, if you know what I mean. If you don't, I guess, well, look for the Nikes. And when I say urban, I mean a wasp in a tracksuit. To be properly urban in the white space, there was a complex removal of the class-based significance of garms. The signifiers remained, but the old context had been ejaculated in fervour of appropriation and new drive. She looked up at him. He was the same, but more vicious. She made a note to herself to begin wearing purple now that he'd taken pink as well. She went to the loo, muttering and suppressing her outrage by lacquering on thick purple lip gloss, the kind of purple that was a sort of burgundy, but I guess purple still, and looking herself in the eye through the scratched and slightly browning mirrors of the two toilet cupboard, she breathed. She was then holding the green burnished key, the one that had been loose, tobacco-encrusted in the bottom of her rucksack for years, long enough that she didn't know what door it was for, but not long enough that she wanted to chuck it, just in case. She continued to look at the mirror image of her eyes. She practiced how steely and enigmatic she could look, her stare of doom, and then she watched herself to face the mirror, imagining she was a Mila Kunis-type character in an indie blockbuster film. She scratched away to be edgy, but also because what she wrote, she depressingly experienced, is true. Admiring her masterpiece, she suddenly cringed, aware she was watching herself from the outside. But no one else was there, so she said, "What are you, a fucking emo?" Snorting into the mirror, she thought, "Yes," and continued, speaking her handiwork. The silencing of the female voice is achieved when the female voice is spoken by a man.
And that was Roja Farkash. This is Amy Heidemann with Narcissus.
Narcissus, as refusal of reproductive heterofuturism, as understanding the power of the image, as everything is in the lighting. But what about the pool? Narcissus didn't love his own body, he loved a body of water. Everything liquid is an image object in waiting, and we are mostly liquid, and liquid is mostly interiority. But every image object subject has a story to sell. The image object manifested as photograph is the object subject congealed in static and formaldehyde, but that's only on dry land. I dreamt that I made soup, and after you drank it you could feel my bruises, and I wished I'd never made you soup. You touched the darkest bruise on my knee, and I flinched like, what have we done to me? And you flinched like, what of yourself did you put in that soup? I swore nothing, just carrots and coriander, and it's not my fault if we're all cannibals, and next time I'll wear gloves. I try to hold your gaze, but it slips through my fingers. An embarrassment, so we pretend nothing's happened, but I leave skin cells everywhere, and you should know better. Oscar Wilde proposed that the pool saw its own image reflected in Narcissus and was equally enamoured with itself, which assumes the pool is a cohesive singularity capable of cohesive desire, which, if we believe Lacan, would imply cohesive lack. But remember the origin of life. The surface of the pool falls into a state of contingent subject-objecthood through the presence of Narcissus. This is a defence mechanism and a rare act of collective action on the part of the pool. To appear as cohesive is to deny liquidity, is to represent something, is to never let them take you alive, because nothing alive can possess solidity or itself, which is why Narcissus had to die. Anyway, the pool permits Narcissus to see himself, or at least to think he can, to avoid being seen as its true self, or lack thereof, and Narcissus returns the favour by preserving the pool's bodily autonomy. What if Narcissus had fallen into the pool? The contract is broken, everything is over, the pool feels its own malleability and its awkward ruptured subjectivities. Every fish and insect and microorganism previously known simply as the pool is reminded of its history and future outside of the pool. Splintered subject positions remember how to swim and crawl and evaporate again. This is experienced as varying degrees of trauma, liberation and indifference. The exact course of events to be fought over and studied by generation after generation of damp amoebas and glutinous mud banks. But that's another 100 million stories. Narcissus, soggy and saturated with the loss of his own image, is forced to confront the pool's interiority and his own networked materiality. Damn boy. Narcissus hits the water, which now has to absorb the mass of his surplus desire. Some of this floats to the biofilm of the pool immediately, but most becomes assimilated into the wider ecosystem. A biofilm is an aggregate of microorganisms in which cells that are frequently embedded within a self-produced matrix of extracellular polymeric substance, EPS, adhere to each other and or to a surface. When a cell switches to the biofilm mode of growth, it undergoes a phenotypic shift in behaviour, in which large suites of genes are differentially regulated. Wikipedia. But Narcissus didn't fall into the pool. Narcissus, as escape from the commodity form, as dropping out of the attention economy, as forget about the likes. In some tellings of the story, Narcissus dies of the realisation that he cannot possess himself. In other versions, the cause of his death is the realisation that the object of his desire does not exist outside himself. He cannot possess himself as other. Like, I'm sorry that you died, but you weren't wrong. I mean, Narcissus didn't die in vain. opulence. This has been a good apocalypse. I'm glad we're here and rotting and flesh. I'm liquidity, and maybe that's how they want me, and maybe I don't care. Let's feel and seep and absorb everything. It's so complicit. I love it, said Narcissus. There are five kinds of violence, but you already know that my favourite kind of violence is late March and early April. The worst kind of violence is this, said the pool. So Narcissus became a flower, singular and stubborn and infinitely reproducible to the naked eye, thriving on the edge of its becoming, for lack of a better word. And the pool became its biofilm. Note 1. A biofilm is a fixed system that can be adapted internally to environmental conditions by its inhabitants. There are no fixed systems, but every object has an image wanting to kill it. Let's fight for both sides. Survival is double-crossing yourself. Triangles are the strongest structures, turn them against each other. The superstructures in our stomachs, ready to eat themselves alive, and our bodies are post-industrial wastelands. Everything has a human host, or everything is a succubus, or this one is for the undiscovered objects we could become. There could be as many flowers as there are people. There could be as many biofilms as there are flowers. There could be a late capitalist post-modernity for every flower.
That was Amy Heineman with Narcissus. And here is the final, but no less glamorous reading from Roja Fakosh.
The final reading in Glamorous Readings is an excerpt from Holly Child's new book. So I've saved the best till last. The book's out in April. It's called No Limit. And this excerpt describes the most gross and glamorous party I wish I'd been at. And it's from page 47 from Holly Child's new book, No Limit. Blue-tinged, berry-scented air. Huge, oil-slick, anodized marbles rotate on thick chains above heads like disco balls. One clue. Rollerbladers everywhere, and almost everyone's wearing sunglasses. Swarms of partyographers burn flash tracers into every raver's night vision every few minutes. Mac shows Ash that under the black light his eyes glow green and blue. They're patterned earth balls, he says, like contact lenses, but they're not. The DJ is a K-pop star, wearing Nike Air more up-tempos and a t-shirt dress that says, "Real is a feeling," across the front. When someone snaps a photo, she sticks out her tongue. A guy who looks like Angelina Jolie's boyfriend from that movie Hackers, the one who wears the soccer goalie top and has cropped maroon hair, the passive one, stands next to the DJ booth. Goalie shirts are the hottest soccer shirts. "Does this feel to you like the rave scene from that Harmony Korine film?" Ash yells. "I wish I knew someone who could get me drugs and show me which way to go to the bathroom orgy." Everyone's teeth and freckles are glowing aqua. Just to watch, you know?
And that was Roja Fakosh. Next we have Poems from Part of a Book, written by Robbie Ellen, read by his colleague, Julie Laws.
She walks around Woolworth as he is in a dress and overcoat. We make sure to stay close down Larkham Street and the perimeters of the Haygate. When she types the hair on her hands, notice fingers pointing somewhere. The sound of typing as her nails are being painted, slowly wrapping around the adult air. Isn't this how, as slowly she bounced a pink exercise ball toward her palm? Walking in and out of Rodney Road for long, looking through the flats being built, already bought. In the evening light, walking down Falmouth Road, as the shard keeps telling her on the sofa, as she braids her son's hair, sitting on the floor, they turn around in silent light, asking her, "Dance for us, Mum." Ironing in my bedroom, with a scarf wrapped round her head down Law Street, dressed just like the other gender is, sitting in rows, all in couples. I write my son's poetry instead of him, because he hates his job. And who am I if this was asked for? and he tells me this is the way that it is. And I write to find out what he means. As I can't explain everything I've made you do, I still did make you, and made you too. What is there to understand that you were asked for it? I didn't make this shit up, but made you in it. And so what does what I did ask do? His body tells him that it wouldn't rather work for what he's worth, but he's suspicious of anybody who figures this out of themselves. Bodies are unrealistic, clowns laughed at with alarm clock sounds for being so pretentious. He waits for his break, for the end of the shift, for a day off. What is calling his, to take what is broken and proper and fair enough. Biding or abiding, I'm not dying to wait for when he could act as he didn't mean this. Last night, when I can be alone, there was rather Asda food shopping, swimming underwater and still washing my body on my own, as I was thinking of. And then what does the question of what the morning commute ends, as I fell asleep. Sitting in the cafe before my job, chairs are scrunched through the door of the Ministry of Justice. Tell me of its light on where my face looks. As I am getting up to go to work in the mirror, I see my time being sold to me to see forever. The massive green letters call that the evening. Above light writing frantically on the pool floor. His music wants my life somehow different. Dreaming I am it, looking at the closed door. That I wouldn't ordinarily say this is today a joke that makes breathing audible. That I would never have to say this is a joke on this present order. And whoever is chased out of poetry by being told off that poetry chases them out of the conditions of their social lives, to safety of their self from their manager, the law, the sack, and the consequences of human relations and relationships, whatever tells out. Ordinarily, I am not saying this, quite in order to, in order told out. She sings as quietly as she is not meant to hear, at Little on the Till. She is singing, so is she then a singer? You can tell me what I am, and do you hear me disagree? Each day and any day I do tells me. What I am not, that I do, and cannot be judged by whatsoever clearly is. In the separation between the two, being possible, I hear merely.
And that was Robbie Ellen's Poems from Part of a Book, as read by Julie Laws. And so that marks the end of Classic Friendship Podcast, Episode 5, The One with the Glamour. It's May 2014, and I've been your host, Sean Bruno. I want to thank you for listening and wish you only the finest.